Lima, the capital of Peru, lies on the country's arid Pacific coast with a bustling metropolis. It's one of South America's largest cities where everything seems to be in endless movement and even the past is constantly being rediscovered. While the city is famous for its cuisine and unique blend of colonial and traditional culture, Peru's most famous tourist destination lies 300 miles away, set high in the Andes Mountains. The Inca civilization was the largest pre-Columbian civilization in the Americas, and Cusco was its capital. The best-kept example of its architecture is Machu Picchu, set high in the Andes Mountains above the Urubamba River Valley. Made up of more than 150 buildings, ranging from baths and houses to temples and sanctuaries, the compound contains more than 100 separate flights of stairs, with most of the individual staircases carved from one slab of stone. Machu Picchu was likely a ceremonial center and, at least in part, acted as an astronomical observatory, with a sacred stone set to accurately indicate the two equinoxes. Twice a year, the sun sits directly over the stone, creating no shadow. The positioning of the buildings was also no accident, as the citadel was arranged to align with celestial events, with the stones used in construction tightly fit together without the use of mortar. The Inca considered the sun the supreme natural god, and during the winter solstice on June 21st, which is obviously different from ours because it's in the southern hemisphere, it's said that the high priest would rope a golden disc to the sacred rock to symbolically catch the sun, returning it back to earth, thus ensuring another bountiful season of crops. Sacsayhuaman is a citadel on the northern outskirts of the city of Cusco, Peru, the historic capital of the Inca Empire. Amazingly, the builders did not use mortar, with the stones used in the construction of these terraces among the largest used in any building in the pre-Hispanic era. They display a precision of cutting and fitting that is unmatched in the Americas. The stones used are so closely spaced that a single piece of paper will not fit between many of the stones. During the Spanish conquest of Peru, they found the Temple of the Sun covered with plates of gold, with 700 plates allegedly removed and added to 200 loads of gold transported back to their ships. After Francisco Pizarro finally entered Cusco, Pedro Pizarro described what they had found. Quote, "On top of a hill, they had a very strong fort surrounded with masonry walls of stones and having two very high round towers. And in the lower part of this wall, there were stones so large and thick that it seemed impossible that human hands could have set them in place. They were so close together and so well fitted that the point of a pin could not have been inserted in one of the joints. The whole fortress was built up in the terraces and flat spaces." While mainstream academia attributes all of the megalithic stonework to the Inca civilization, it is clear that the site was rebuilt after some sort of cataclysmic events and likely predated the Inca themselves. Evidence for this can be found in the architecture, which clearly shows two distinct levels of workmanship. The earlier stonework being much more sophisticated and precise, which is reminiscent of other megalithic sites around the world, such as in Baalbek, Lebanon, where the Roman Empire reconstructed the ancient temples and came nowhere near its original construction in both the size of the stones used or in the excellence in which they were erected. According to tribal legends, as well as in accounts from early European settlers, an ancient race of giants once allegedly inhabited the Americas, which some researchers speculate may have been responsible for the Cyclopean masonry, a term describing a worldwide style of prehistoric masonry characterized by the use of massive stones of irregular shape and size. About 200 miles from Machu Picchu, we find what are known as the Nazca Lines, which are best seen from a plane or hot air balloon. The name is derived from the Nazca culture, which flourished in the area between 100 BC and the year 800. And going by some of their mummified remains, they were of a short stature, averaging 4 foot 9 inches in height.
Our guide brought us to the haunting Chowchilla Cemetery, a Nazca burial ground where mummified corpses were laid to rest.
The Nazca civilization was a small people, had approximately 1.5 meter.
There are various theories as to why these markings were left in the ground, which for the most part are only fully visible from high above. While some researchers have speculated that they were meant to be seen by the gods, and others suggest that they were created to signal aliens, some mainstream archaeologists have theorized that they had something to do with irrigation, as they seem to follow the paths of aquifers from which aqueducts collected water, possibly part of rituals to summon water. That said, local shamans insist that they were used for ritualistic purposes. The idea is that an initiate would be taken to a particular location, presumably blindfolded, and then after entering a trance-like state, which may or may not have included psychotropic substances, were then encouraged to have an out-of-body experience, or at least project their consciousness up in an effort to be able to remotely describe the design below, which is how they would pass the initiation. It also has been theorized that the lines could act as some sort of astronomical calendar. While there isn't a consensus to their purpose, the Paracas culture is considered by some historians to be the possible precursor that influenced the development of the Nazca Lines. In the year 2018, drones used by archaeologists revealed 25 geoglyphs in the Palpa province that are being assigned to the Paracas culture. Many predate the associated Nazca Lines by at least 1,000 years. The Paracas culture was an Andean society near the Pacific Ocean, probably best known for their burials, consisting of a conical textile wrap bundle containing a seated individual facing north across the Bay of Paracas, next to offerings such as ceramics, baskets, and weapons, and each body was bound with a cord to hold it in a seated position before being wrapped in many layers of intricate, ornate, and finely woven textiles, considered to be some of the finest ever produced by pre-Columbian Andean societies. In the late 1920s, Peruvian archaeologist Julio Tello found hundreds of cone-shaped skulls in the Paracas regions of Peru. Artificial skull elongation has been practiced by a high number of cultures in practically every corner of the world, from Western Europe and the Americas to the Far East and Africa. Some of the skulls in Peru, however, are unique in that some of them are found to be missing a suture. Cranial sutures are lines indicating where the bony plates of the skull join together, and some specimens from Peru are missing one that should be there. While some websites claim that the sutures that separate the two parietal bones, which is called the sagittal, can close and ultimately disappear with age, I have not personally seen an example of this outside of Peru, and every one of my professors that I asked while earning my degrees in anthropology claimed that this phenomena was unique to these Peruvian samples and could not offer any explanation. So, While I can't conclusively solve this puzzle to my own satisfaction yet, what I can say is that carbon and nitrogen isotope analysis of the bones has shown that artificial cranial modification was performed on people that ate a more varied diet, indicating that they were perhaps more privileged. The remains of these specimens also appear to have fewer signs of physical violence against them, once again suggesting that they were from a higher echelon of society. In other words, it likely indicated a social status of nobility, especially during the earlier times, as the practice became more and more common with time, even among the lower classes. In regards for why this was done, one common theory is that it was an attempt to imitate hominins that may have been revered in antiquity that did not have a forehead, such as Neanderthal, which had a sloping head and a naturally elongated skull shape, rather than a round one. While I can't dismiss this as a possibility, in my estimation, the reason likely had to do with altering the shape of the skull to apply pressure to the pineal gland, which may have had something to do with the secretion of DMT, which the brain allegedly releases when we dream, and shamans sometimes take as a drug to induce hallucinations and mystical experiences. I can't prove this medically, so keep that in mind, but I believe that the ancient civilizations that engaged in this practice were more interested in communicating with other worlds, experiencing other dimensions, and engaging with discarnate entities than with imitating extinct or archaic hominins. Ayahuasca, meaning vine of the soul or of the ancestors, is a sacred South American psychoactive brew used both socially and as a ceremonial spiritual medicine among the indigenous peoples of the Amazon basin. Its long history of ritual use among indigenous groups, especially in Peru, and traditional importance of divination, clairvoyance, and astral travel leads me to believe that the cranial modification, including trepanation, which means making holes in the skull to the surface of the brain, was done for purposes of accessing or amplifying altered states of consciousness, not for aesthetic or cosmetic reasons. Another pre-Incan culture that left mummies was called the Wari, which flourished in South Central Andes and coastal area of modern-day Peru from about 1,000 to 2,000 years ago. Archaeologists exploring a Wari tomb recently uncovered a female mummy and were stunned to discover two big, bright, blue orbs in her eye sockets. The Wari people lived and ruled in what is now Peru for roughly 500 years, controlling most of the Peruvian highland and coast, integrating dispersed cultures, and building a network of roads that the Inca would later repurpose for their own empire. While the exact structure of Wari society remains open to debate, archaeologists have found evidence suggesting that religion was deeply intertwined with politics. It involved animal and human sacrifice, including children, and that women were involved at the highest levels of governance. The mummy depicted with the large blue eyes likely represented a high social status.
Archaeologists in Lima have unearthed two mummies, an adult and a child, thought to be more than 1,000 years old. Researchers on Thursday said the remains likely belonged to two individuals from the Wari civilization, which ruled in what is now Peru for some 500 years between 600 and 1100 AD. The tomb was discovered at the Great Pyramid of Huacapulcana archaeological site in the heart of Lima. When in good condition, Wari tombs can be identified by the ceramic and textile offerings placed around the dead. One of many reasons the archaeological team says the burial techniques are consistent with the Wari. The tomb was the third significant find discovered at the site. The burial techniques, including fibers used in the wraps used to protect the mummies and the burial masks, are all consistent with other Wari tombs found in the past. There is now a small museum dedicated to the ancient site, which predates the Incas. Peru is a country rich in archaeological treasures. It has hundreds of sites that date back thousands of years and span dozens of cultures, including the Incan Empire that was in power when Spanish explorers arrived in the early 1500s.
Many people believe that the oldest examples of artificially mummified human remains come from Egypt, but this is not the case. They come from South America, in what is now modern Chile, having been buried up to 2,000 years before the Egyptian mummies. The earliest mummy that has been found in Egypt dated to around 3000 BC. The oldest anthropologically modified Chincharo mummy dates from around 5000 BC, with the oldest naturally mummified remains dating to 7000 BC. While many cultures throughout the world have sought to focus on preserving the dead elite, the Chincharo tradition performed mummifications on all members of their society, making them archaeologically significant. Often, Chincharo mummies were elaborately prepared by removing the internal organs and replacing the skin and flesh with clay. The mummies may have served as a means of assisting the soul in surviving, but this is just speculation. Genetically speaking, these people's female lineage is from haplogroup A. That is to say, their mtDNA passed down from mother to their offspring. Fathers cannot pass along their mtDNA. So haplogroup A belongs primarily to East Asians, probably from around 20,000 years ago. The frequency in Native Americans is relatively high and speaks to some of the artifacts attributed to the Olmec time period, which does not consist of only one singular race, but many of the artifacts attributed to the Olmec certainly resemble an East Asian phenotype. Of course, the New World is not new at all, and was populated by all of the same demographics of the Old World since antiquity, an archaeological, genetic, and mythological fact that modern academia is really struggling to deny. America was not named after the Italian explorer Amerigo Vespucci, but instead the name of the American continent was adopted from its original inhabitants, such as the early inhabitants of Peru that called it Amaruca, meaning land of the plumed serpents, which incidentally is also the chief deity of the Maya in Central America, Cuculcan, which means plumed or feathered serpent, as does Quetzalcoatl of the Aztec in Mexico. In fact, the Incan leader that was captured and executed by the Spanish in 1572 was named Tupac Amaru, which means shining serpent. It's no coincidence that in this statue of Amerigo Vespucci, there's a reptile beneath his feet, climbing a column representing America, as serpent worship was a worldwide phenomenon before history became so distorted. That said, a more correct translation or interpretation of plumed or feathered serpent is winged serpent, and this symbol can still be seen in museums in Egypt and the Middle East, with flying dragons also prevalent in ancient Asia.
Officially, America is named after the explorer Amerigo Vespucci, but this appears doubtful, like so much of American history, which has transformed a one-time pirate of the family name Griego into an iconic hero named Christopher Columbus. As for America, according to Manly Hall, America is named after the plumed serpent, who is the messenger of the sun. He was the god Quetzalcoatl in Mexico, and in Peru he was called Amaru. From the latter name comes our word, America. Amaruca is, literally translated, Land of the Plumed Serpent.
Pedro Cieza de Leon was a Spanish conquistador, known primarily for his history and description of Peru. He wrote his book, Crónicas del Perú, in four parts, but only the first part was published during his lifetime. The remaining sections were not published until the 19th and 20th centuries. He was born to a family of Jewish conversos, meaning he had converted from Judaism to Catholicism, like many Europeans of the 15th and 16th century, a portion of whom then split from the Catholic Church, becoming Protestants in the 17th century following the Thirty Years' War, totally oblivious today of their actual ancestry or true genetic roots. But that's another story.
How many people really realize what happened within the Jewish community in Spain in 1492?
Now, recently we've discovered that Christopher Columbus, Cristóbal Colón, was known as a quote-unquote Marrano. Marrano? Mm-hmm. The Marranos are those that were forced to convert to Roman Catholicism, that were Sephardim, and then they were forced to eat pork, which is very unkosher, and then they were called Marrano, pigs, swine. Because you see, the facade of the Spanish Inquisition, what is Inquisition? It comes from the root word to inquire. Mm-hmm. But this was more than inquiring. This was spying and forcing Jews to convert to Roman Catholicism. So King Solomon would send, along with King Hiram of the Phoenician Empire, fleets of ships every 3 years to Tarshish to bring back gold and silver, exotic animals, exotic fruits, and so forth. This ancient Tarshish is none other than Sepharad. You must say, what's Sepharad? Sepharad is Spain. Even to this date, Spain is Sepharad. And from there you derive the term Sephardic or Sephardim, that are the initial ancestors of Jews in Spain, that's Sepharad. Now, talking about Christopher Columbus, a lot of people don't know, but I'm sharing this with you, he was a converso, meaning he too was a crypto-Jew or a Jew in hiding. It so happens that the majority of the passengers on La Niña, La Pinta, and La Santa María, his fleet of ships, were of our kind of surname. What kind of surname? Hispanic surname, Spanish surnames. We are the descendants, many of you are descendants of the secret Jews of Spain. That's the crypto-Jews I'm referring to.
In 1536, León was greatly surprised to learn of the discovery of the land of the Inca, and so decided to embark on his journey to South America to see for himself the artifacts of precious metals which had been brought to Spain, along with legends of cities of gold. Spanish conquistador Francisco Pizarro, conqueror of the Incan Empire, was also his first cousin. According to Pizarro, quote, "The ruling class in the kingdom of Peru was fair-skinned with fair hair about the color of ripe wheat. Most of the great lords and ladies looked like white Spaniards. In that country, I met an Indian woman with her child, both so fair-skinned that they were hardly distinguishable from fair white men." León's books documented and described the Inca, as well as the discovery and conquest of Peru by the Spaniards, most of which went unpublished when he died, considered by historians to be lost, until it eventually turned up in a Vatican library, and a Spanish version of the text was published in 1979. The importance of his work lies in his detailed descriptions of the geography, ethnography, flora, and fauna, which has become even more valuable in light of modern archaeological discoveries concerning pre-Columbian civilizations, which included a surprisingly eclectic mix of ethnicities and races. The best example of this includes sites belonging to the Chachapoya, known as the mysterious cloud people of Peru. Cieza de León remarked that, among the indigenous Peruvians, the Chachapoyas were unusually fair-skinned and famously beautiful. Quote, "These Indians that live at the Chachapoyas are the most white and good-looking of all those that I have seen in my travels through the Indies, the Americas. And their women were so beautiful that merely due to their good nature, many of them deserve to be women of the Incas and to be taken to their temples of the sun. And so we see now it is that the remaining Indian women of this lineage are extremely pretty because they are white and very well built. Pedro Cieza de Leon arrived in Peru in 1548 as a simple soldier in a military group sent to quell an uprising that had turned into a civil war between the Spanish rulers of the country. He remained until 1550, during which time he visited almost every part of the newly conquered land, observing and recording descriptions of the terrain, the plants, the customs of the natives, and the major facets of their history. He had been keeping a journal of his observations ever since beginning his travels in Colombia in 1541, but now Cieza became fascinated with the idea of writing a history of Peru and its people. He would interview the surviving wise men and noblemen of the Incas to learn all he could about the history and traditions of the conquered Inca Empire. He recorded the following legend about the appearance of a white-bearded god to the forebears of the Incas. Before the Incas ruled or were even heard of in these kingdoms, these Indians speak of another thing much greater than all others which they tell, because they affirm that they went for a long time without seeing the sun, and that suffering tremendously with this deficiency, they raised great prayers and supplications to those they revered as gods, asking them to restore the light they lacked. And in this manner, they arose from the island of Titicaca, which is the great lake of Colao, the sun shining brilliantly, which made them all very happy. And afterwards, they say that from the land of the noon sun, there came and appeared to them a white man of large build, whose aspect and person showed great authority and veneration. And this man had such supreme power that he leveled the mountains and raised up the plains into large hills, making water flow from boulders. And since they recognized his supreme power, they called him the creator of all things, their originator, father of the sun, because even this notwithstanding, they say that he did many greater things, because he gave life to men and animals, and from his hand they received notable benefit. According to the Indians who told it to me, who heard it from their fathers, who also heard it in the songs they preserved from antiquity, this man went towards the north, working many miracles in his journey through the mountains, and they never saw him again. In many places, they say that he gave commandments to the men about how to live, and that he spoke with love and much humility, admonishing them to be good and not cause harm or injury to one another, but instead to love each other and have charity. Generally, they call him Tiki Viracocha, even though in the province of Callao, they call him Topoca, and in other places, it is known as Arnauan. Many temples were built to him in different places, where they erected stone statues in his likeness, before which they offered sacrifices. The large stone figures in the city of Tiwanaku are said to date from that era, and even though by tradition inherited from the past, they recount this that I tell of Tiki Viracocha, they say nothing else about him, nor that he ever returned to any part of this kingdom. Pedro Sarmiento de Gamboa was a celebrated navigator and captain in the Spanish army. While stationed in Cusco, Peru, he was ordered to compile a history of the Incas. Summoning some of the oldest wise men still living in the ancient Inca capital, Sarmiento interviewed them individually and compared their testimonies to draw his conclusions and make his compilation. The manuscript he prepared was called Historia de los Incas. The manuscript remained unpublished in the custody of the Spanish crown for many years, finally finding its way by sale to the library at the University of Göttingen, Germany, where it was discovered and published in 1906. Sarmiento's version of the white god legend is as follows. All the Indians agree that they were created by this Viracocha, who they believe was a man of medium height, white and clothed in white robe, gathered around his body, and that he carried a staff and a book in his hands. After this, they tell a strange story, that is, that after this Viracocha created all the people, he came walking to a place where a large group had congregated. Viracocha continued his journey, doing the works of piety and instructing the people he had created. And wishing to leave the land of Peru, he gave a speech to those he had created, advising them of things which were to happen in the future. He warned them that people would come, saying that they were the Viracocha, their creator, and that the people should not believe the impostors, but that in the coming ages they would send his messengers to teach and support them. And having said this, he and his two companions went into the ocean and walked away over the waters without sinking, as if they had been walking on land. The world-famous explorer Thor Heyerdahl also wrote about the ancient Incan legend of a sun god named Contiki Viracocha, who was the supreme head of the mythical fair-skinned people that predated the Inca civilization in Peru. Contiki means sun tiki or fire tiki, and was regarded as a sun king of these legendary white men who left enormous ruins on the shores of Lake Titicaca. Heyerdahl asserted that the Inca told the Spanish about how colossal monuments that stood deserted about the landscape were erected by a race of white gods who had lived there before the Inca themselves became rulers. The Inca described these white gods as wise, peaceful instructors who had long beards, were taller than the Inca, and taught the Inca's forefather architecture as well as many of their customs. Appearing long before the time of the Inca Empire, the coming of this Viracocha constituted the single most important tradition of the Andean Indians. For many days prior to his coming, the sun was darkened and the people suffered tremendously from lack of sunlight. Only after intense praying was the light restored, after which Viracocha appeared. The Inca said that Contiki Viracocha and the white-bearded gods went off westward into the Pacific Ocean, never to be seen again, after which the Inca themselves took over power in the country. That said, when Francisco Pizarro, whose expeditions led to the Spanish conquest of Peru, asked who these pale, blonde, and red-haired people were, the Inca replied that they were the last descendants of the Viracocha, a light-skinned, bearded Incan god. The Viracochas, they said, were a race of divine bearded white men, so like the Spanish that the Europeans were called Viracochas the moment they came to the Inca Empire. The Incas supposedly thought that they were the Viracochas who had come sailing back. A similar instance was documented to have occurred between Cortes and the Aztec, who believed that he was Quetzalcoatl, returning from across the sea, who was depicted in this textbook issued by the Mexican government as a blonde, bearded man with white skin and blue eyes. The Chachapoyas lived in the Andes, in what is now northern Peru, right next to Ecuador, with an elevation of nearly 10,000 feet. The perimeter walls of the settlement are 60 feet high, protecting roughly 500 circular dwelling structures, which originally had conical roofs, which is absolutely anomalous in pre-Columbian architecture. The region has been inhabited for over 8,000 years, with the Chachapoya flourishing between the year 800 and 1470, when they were then subdued by the Inca. In 1997, about 500 miles to the north of Calup, the name of the site of the Chachapoya, over 200 mummies were discovered high in the cliffs around this remote lake. The mummies were wrapped in seated positions and sealed, overlooking the lake, all of which is highly abnormal amongst Andean cultures. Many of the mummies had been looted, and some had strange cranial features such as elongated skulls, and the religion seemed to be a sort of shamanism, as indicated by the artifacts found along with the remains, including hallucinogenic plants. Evidence of violence and fire was also found at the site, with random age and gender skeletons discovered in scattered, open locations, suggesting that they were not interred there, but rather, they had died suddenly in that spot. 230 mummies are now quietly kept at the Museo Le Mebamba, but the remains and artifacts are not being displayed or publicly studied, and their exact location is unknown. While I have much more to say about the prehistory of Peru, I'll present it in a follow-up video, so make sure to subscribe and check out my books. Species with Amnesia, Our Forgotten History, Gods with Amnesia, Subterranean Worlds of Inner Earth, The Occult Secrets of Vril, and 1666, Redemption Through Sin. My name is Robert Sepper. Have a great weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.